Black sunrise, shadow. My very special guest is Dilip Roper, the somewhat famous and fabulous SOB, as far as the government's concerned, from Roper's Cafe in Wellington Street in Auckland. Dilip, welcome to the program.
G'day, man.
Now, you've got a little bit of important information to us about our fabulous constitution, or more to the point, our ragged constitution, as it's been ripped apart. And more recently, we've been given a brand new building. I believe, $8 million was spent on it. Our new Supreme Court.
Well, it's been operational nearly a year. Was opened by Prince William on the 18th of January this year. And next year on the 17th at 5 o'clock, on the 17th of January, 5 o'clock next year, it's been operational for a year without a challenge, a legal challenge. I've been trying to get the Ngāpuhi and Tūhoe people who have currently got their final negotiations with the Crown, with the treaty settlements under the Waitangi Tribunal, to challenge the legality of the court.
Why trying to challenge the Supreme Court's legality?
Well, the main reason is very simple. The New Zealand Supreme Court actually operates using an anonymous judge.
An anonymous judge?
That's right.
How much accountability is there with an anonymous judge?
Well, there isn't any. New Zealand government's criticised Fiji and Zimbabwe. At least they don't have anonymous judges.
Well, how did they accomplish this?
They did it in a decision to ensure that the Roper versus Bank of New Zealand, which was a pretty hefty case, it wasn't going to be heard by the Supreme Court, and we've got the evidence of that fact. The relevance of Roper versus Bank of New Zealand is that it's the only case, to my knowledge, where the creation of money has been actually proven and not been rebutted by anyone, because it used 6 years of Bank of New Zealand's short-form disclosures. I won't go into the details because it'll start boring everyone because it's all about accountancy. But we proved in there that... money's created out of the mortgage money is created out of 99.9% in the dollar. So you know, 0.1% of the bank of mortgage money is cash holding.
Well, I'm sure they've taken an immense risk on giving people mortgages then. Oh.
No, they don't take immense risks because they hold the property. So, but the money is actually created out of nothing. And I mean, so the evidence was presented before to the courts, and the courts have never rebutted it. So. The information was not rebutted by Bank of New Zealand's lawyers, who were one of the top 25. This law firm is called Bell Gully. They're in the top 25 law firms in the world. And Murray Tingey, who's the lawyer for in Bell Gully, he's a partner of Bell Gully, is regarded as one of the top financial lawyers in New Zealand. And he couldn't rebut those facts because they were from the Bank of New Zealand's own short-form disclosures, which are audited accounts.
It's kind of difficult to rebut something that's a true and stated fact by the very people you're trying to defend.
Yes, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, everyone makes comments that money's created out of nothing and everyone knows it, but there's a different story when you go to present these matters in court documents, because if you make one little mistake in a court document, trust me, they'll throw it out, and they couldn't throw these documents out.
Did you have a lot of trial and error when trying to figure out what kind of format and everything all these went into?
No. It's an accounting document. All other mortgage cases I know of have been done via lawyers. This is done not from the legal point of view or using words. This is using numbers, and it's very hard to rebut numbers because numbers either add up or they don't. And mathematics is mathematics, and you can't play around with mathematics. And if the numbers stack up, they stack up. You can't rebut them.
Now, seeing as the Supreme Court has been established as the highest legal authority in New Zealand, how does that change our previous legal system?
Well, New Zealand used to have, and it was good that New Zealand had this because New Zealand's population was only 3 million. It's okay, it's moved up to 4 million. But that's... in most countries, like Sydney's got a population of 4 million. You just imagine Australia, Sydney having its own court system. It's good to have as many people as possible. And New Zealand used to used to go to London to the Privy Council. And it's good to have this remoteness because that means that you can't have insidious decisions. That means your decisions which are made by because everyone's inside everyone's pocket, as to say, and everyone knows each other. And of course, you don't have independent decision making. When you have a independent people making decisions, you're not influenced by corruption or by people being friends and so forth. And that's why the problem with New Zealand is that because we've got such a small population, Supreme Court judges, of course, are not going to really, recently one of the Supreme Court judges, of course, was taken off the bench, as we all know. And that just shows where the problem is. New Zealand needs to actually examine its court system. The reason why I asked Ngā Puhi and the Tūhoe people to look at their negotiations with the Crown is that the New Zealand government, who is the Crown, wishes to finalise the treaty negotiations so that it can move on and bring in the New Zealand Constitution. The problem is this, is that the Treaty of Waitangi, the Waitangi Tribunal and all the court systems, they relate to their jurisdiction is found by the flags and their seal. Now, a lot of people don't, if you watch, I think I mentioned this last time I was on the show, when you watch courtroom dramas, you always see the flag. In the courtrooms and in American dramas and so forth, that's the jurisdiction by which that court is ruled. In New Zealand, we have a seal which has a flag, and which is I won't go into the history of the flags, but it's a 1902 flag. There was no constitutional document written in 1902. Therefore, the fact that we have these Maori tribes going to court to the Waitangi Tribunal, which comes under that the 1902 jurisdiction, and they don't realise that it's a false jurisdiction. The only true jurisdiction which Maori tribes should even be contemplating having negotiations under is under the 1835 flag, which was first the founding document of this country. I recently did a complaint to the Broadcasting Standards Authority, in which Television New Zealand came back and tried to prove itself that they were not using the wrong flags and misleading people. And in doing so, they mentioned the websites which were from the Arts, Culture and Heritage website. And even New Zealand's Arts, Culture and Heritage website has wrong information. But what they did say is that when the Treaty of Waitangi was signed, which was in 1840, the flag that was lowered, which was the original New Zealand flag, which was the Declaration of Independence flag of 1835, they mentioned that the flag that was lowered was a de facto flag. It wasn't the actual flag that was raised establishing the first jurisdiction. And by stating that, that to me proves that the original flag of 1835 is still is still the jurisdictional flag of New Zealand, because a de facto flag cannot take down its jurisdiction.
Now, does that mean, if I may, that the New Zealand government is operating under a false jurisdiction, therefore they have no right yeah. to tell anybody what to do or to enforce any laws or anything, just because it's fiction?
Oh, no, they are a fictional government, but they can enforce their power, you know, might over right is the method of operation. However, by next year on that date that I mentioned, the 17th of January at 5 o'clock, if no challenge is made, then they have, because no challenge is made, their jurisdiction will rule.
But a challenge has been made, has it not?
Well,
even if a challenge actually is made, they could just say, oh, a challenge wasn't made, couldn't they? They could just completely ignore it.
Well, when you have anonymous judges and no one in the media wants to investigate that, then what type of democracy do you have?
You have a slavocracy.
Something like that. But, you know, it actually is flabbergasting because all the major tribes in Ngāpuhi and the Tūhoe, especially the Tūhoe, makes me quite laugh, actually, because they're the ones 3 years ago who had, you know, had these armed raids and everything. And they're not even trying to counter that with against the police and demand the police give an apology.
Mm, I spoke to Tamaiti about this, and he says that every Māori group is kind of trying something on in some way, shape or form, but he personally doesn't believe that attempting Māori sovereignty under the original 1835 flag will work. But that's his opinion. My opinion differs from his. But
well, the problem with would be a good show to have Tamaiti and I have that discussion on the show, and I can prove it to him, because obviously he's not read the stuff that I've written and submissions that I've made, because they are the Attorney General. Who is also the Minister of Arts, Culture and Heritage, who's from the website which Television New Zealand quotes, false information, is also the Minister of Treaty Negotiations. Now, and this is the funny thing about it, is that one of the negotiators for Tūhoe, Matt, he doesn't even want to read the stuff that I've got written. And the evidence that I've presented, which proves beyond doubt that there is a false jurisdiction.
Well, what have they got to lose?
Well, put it this way: if Matt's if the government hasn't lined his pockets, then the guy's obviously hasn't got the intelligence to understand the stuff that I've written.
Mm. So then he would probably lose his credibility for ignoring it in the first place, yes?
Well, he's got credibility because the rest of Māoridom, the rest of Tūhoe, display this slave mentality or victim mentality, in which they're not willing to challenge him. He doesn't even want to carry out his fiduciary duties to prove that the government is actually... The crown is actually the queen. Now, a lot of people are saying, this is another part of the confusion, is that these Maori people can't even figure out the difference, and the information is being provided to them that the crown is the queen of right. And we have Queen Elizabeth II, who is actually the queen. And the Ngāpuhis especially have been told us over and over again that they should stop negotiating with the Crown, who is the Queen of Right, which is actually on the New York Stock Exchange. It's actually a company, it's a corporation.
Formerly the Dutch East India Company, formerly, yeah. As far as Bill Turner, who we've had on the show, has led me to believe.
They've been given evidence left, right and centre, and yet they still can't see what's going on in this country, and they've just been led up the garden path, and I guess they'd all got their little hands out and they all want the crumbs, but they don't want to take it because they can't see the pie.
Yeah, I mean, they don't want to take their responsibility. I mean, perhaps they need it mindlessly repeated to them hundreds of thousands of times for them to get it, Philip.
Well, you know, they blame colonialism, yet they don't see that they're lost in the colonialism, and they've been given a way out, and they don't want to take it. It's quite devastating to actually think that the Maori leadership in this country is going to lead their future grandchildren's wealth and well-being down the garden path.
But maybe
right now,
and this is not something that's isolated to Māoridom, is it, Dilip? This is something that is worldwide. Almost every culture subscribes to that kind of apathy.
Well, that's right. But one thing at least, because my uncle was personal assistant to Gandhi, India did actually get rid of the East India Company out of there. And we're trying to give assistance to Maori, and they don't seem to see what jewels they've been offered.
And I love that interview with Dilip. It's kind of learned... kind of got me thinking about a lot of things. You know? There's just too much all the time corruption, don't you think, Will?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not – we have to make the point that that was not an attack at any peoples. It's a united problem, and it's a united front that has to face these issues. And apathy comes in all shapes and forms. You know, I can be apathetic on the best of days too, but I can also get fired up. and we have to get fired up in an intelligent sort of way and try and understand a lot of this legal syntax and sleight of hand that has us under the thumb. Because otherwise, it's just going to be, you know, more people extorted by banks and their criminal arms, the police force, and whatnot. You know, it's just going to carry on, same as it ever was.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, until we change, the system won't. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. The second half of our interview with Dilip. We'll continue after the break.
I was toting my pack along the dusty...
Now, as far as our Supreme Court is concerned, I mean, it will change the legal structure of our country in terms of the going overseas to the Privy Council. Instead, now the highest court that a New Zealander will be able to subscribe to will be the Supreme Court. Now, how will that affect New Zealand's constitution? I mean, many New Zealanders are unaware that we even have one.
Well... the government, of course, is now stating that they're going to have consultation on this constitution.
Oh, I've seen government consultation. I don't believe it for a minute.
well, the funniest thing is it was announced by Bill English and the Minister of Māori Affairs, who is Dr. Peter Sharples. Well, the funny thing is that with the Māori flag consultation, which just happened a year ago, and this is what brings in the TVNZ one complaint that I made. Proved that the consultation by Dr. Peter Sharples was actually contrary to the Attorney General's flag that he stated was the 1835 flag. Now, when you have the Attorney General, who's the highest officer of the law, stating that a certain flag was the New Zealand's first founding flag, and you have the Minister of Maori Affairs during a Maori Maori flag consultation presenting another flag, then what constitutional basis do we have there? And for the major media not to even investigate this, when the evidence has been is beyond doubt that that there are two conflicting matters between two ministers, then we how are we going to be actually treated on issues that are going to be major concerns, such as the Bill of Rights Act and so forth, for the our so-called for coming up in, discussions on the Constitution?
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. And the New Zealand people, I mean, so, you know, I forget how many sheep there are for each New Zealander.
Well, I don't think there's many things in New Zealand that aren't sheep, in my opinion. You know, I mean, it's not like the sheep outnumber the people. It's more like the people are the sheep. And we're all being herded in one way or another, and I believe in the New Zealand public's chance, eventually we'll be herded into some description of slaughterhouse, whether that be a slaughterhouse that'll just slaughter our rights or slaughter our sovereignty or whatever.
Well, we're actually losing our sovereignty, and that's the point about the Supreme Court. We will lose a lot of our sovereignty. We will lose probably our rights to the ancient common law, which is probably one of the very few things that are protecting us. That brings me to, and I'm questioning the ancient common law's usage in New Zealand, but I'm also thinking just with all the stuff that's happening in London with Wikipedia, for example, with the WikiLeaks guy, and I'm starting to question just what's going on there, for the simple reason that here's this guy who's been imprisoned, who's got these lawyers, and I can't understand why his lawyers have not used the ancient common law, which is that, and there's a very simple thing to do, is to demand habeas corpus. That means bring forward, or it's not just habeas corpus, but it's bring forward the evidence of the case. If you can't bring forward the evidence of the case within 72 hours and there is no case to answer, the man is free. And that has not been asked or demanded. And I cannot understand why the lawyers who in England have not had this guy from WikiLeaks free by now.
Well, maybe they were out taking a WikiLeak when that was taught in law school.
Well, I'm actually growing a Hitler moustache, and
more fashionable.
Well, I thought I'd call. You see, in New Zealand, we have this thing called Movember, which is November, but you know, you grow a mo. And I got a coleslaw during November. And so I continued growing it into a moustache, and I thought, oh, I'm not going to shave it off for December. I'm going to call it Dicksember, dictator, because we're being dictated to all the time. And I thought, well, it's an idea just to kind of like everyone, maybe if they think that they're being dictated to have a Dicksember. So we all look like little Hitlers.
Oh, mate. That sounds great. I wonder if our Prime Minister, John Key, would grow his his one out. It might be a bit more suited to his ruling style. Now, speaking of ruling style, in this country for a long, long time, Māori land claims have been, the bane, really, of the political scene, and a lot of tension there, and many of these claims about confiscation of land and things of this nature which need to be returned, or in the opinion of Māori, or in state of effect, is irrelevant. But how will those be affected by the changing of our legal system, i.e. the establishment of the Supreme Court?
Well, the thing is that there has been land confiscations, and there also has been acquisition of land under the Public Works Act. A lot of people don't realise that the Sky City, where the casino is, that was actually land acquired by, under the Public Works Act, straight across the road from Television New Zealand, which shows you how what investigative skills Television News has.
You mean the block directly across from them?
Straight across the road from Television New Zealand, land acquired for the public, for a bus terminus, was turned into a casino. And, and no kidding, that could not happen in America. In fact, there is this old lady who actually wouldn't allow this casino guy to buy her land. And there she is, her old house amongst this big casino all around her, because they couldn't acquire her land. Whereas in New Zealand, the government acquired the land and then they built a casino. And that's the Auckland City Council for you. And no one does a thing about it. You know, and you know, we all talk about, oh, yes, New Zealand's transparent and all this stuff, and it doesn't violate the Declaration of Human Rights. Well, we've got the stupidest and most incompetent human rights commission, and there is Roslyn Noonan, and I've got video evidence to prove that.
Oh, yeah, I mean, if you have a look at New Zealand, being the so-called least corrupt country in the world, according to the Transparency International's Corruption Perception Index. But as Penny Bright has stated on this show, if we had a Corruption Reality Index, the position of New Zealand on the least corrupt countries in the world would probably be somewhere around the region of Zimbabwe.
Yes, well, that'd be correct. In fact, here's a funny one. The Governor-General, Anant Satriarnat, he owned property straight across the road from our cafe, and that was on land acquired under the Public Works Act as well. And here's the funniest bit. His friend, who was Dr. Rajendra Prasad, who used to be the, I think it was a race relations conciliator, and then he became the commissioner for the families. His mother-in-law's land was on that same block. So here she was, this Indian woman. She was kicked off her land because she was a nigger, just like our family. The council tried to kick us out of the that same street. And that land was taken by the Auckland City Council. The Rajendra, the Prasad land was taken under the Public Works Act. And and pulled down, these old houses were pulled down, and the Governor General, who would have been the only dark person in that block, could come in because he was a lawyer and live in the new flash Freeman's Bay estate. So, you know,
the Public Works Act is being used acquire land so that it can be sold on to private investors? Hand with these people?
What happened is the Auckland City Council called Freeman's Bay a slum. They called it, and then they created a slum clearance. And this was where Rajendra Prasad's mother-in-law owned land, you know, and she had a greengrocer's there. And they were shifted off, and their old look, the properties weren't that slummy. It was because what they do is they put a designation on it, and they prevent you from doing repairs. And so they create a slum because these are Freeman's Bay is an inner city suburb. They thought, oh yes, this is a good way to make capital gain, kick all the working class out of the area, and turn make them flash townhouses. And bring in the young professionals, which is what they did. And of course, Anand Satriana being one of the young professionals, he was a lawyer working for the Crown Law Office. He got one of those little properties, and now he's Governor General. It's quite weird because he doesn't see the fact that. people were shifted off their lands for an arbitrary reason so that he could have a property there. And that's a violation of the Declaration of Human Rights. I think it's Article 17 or 18. Mm-hmm. It's the same. In principle, it's no different to Mary Rapalich, who was one of the owners of the property straight across the road from Television New Zealand, being forced off her land to make way for a casino.
Now, lastly, Dilip, I mean, you're very, very active in criticising and indeed putting in complaints and indeed doing a lot of research into these elements. Just lastly, what's next for you on the cards? What's your area of expertise coming into the future here?
Well, looking at the Constitution, we're going to be probably exposing Nikki Kaye, who's my local MP. She failed to actually ensure that documents that should have been presented to the Governor-General and should have been presented to Prince William prior to opening the Supreme Court, and that showed that she's failed to carry out her constitutional duty. These documents that I did present to her for presentation to the Governor-General and to Prince William proved that, the Supreme Court operated with an anonymous judge, and secondly, that there was a police charge against the Prime Minister under Section 107 of the Crimes Act. Now, that should have been presented to Prince William prior to opening it to court. It wasn't, for the simple reason that had Prince William had such documents in, before him, then his grandmother, Her Majesty the Queen, would have advised that the Supreme Court could not be opened until a full investigation of the judiciary was done. Maori, of course, are going to go straight into this the Foreshore and Seabeds Act and its renaming, asking, part of the conditions of the Foreshore and Seabeds Act is that they're going to have to go to court to find out if they have title. Would you want to go into a court where they use anonymous judges at the Supreme Court level, and where they cannot prove that they're actually compliant with law?
Well, it doesn't sound like a Kiwi court. It sounds like a kangaroo court. I'd like to thank you very much, Dilip, for coming on the show today.
Okay, and have a Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
The best for the new year.
Indeed. May you have a happy dictatorship.
Yes, Dixiember.
All right. There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. Dilip Rupa celebrating Dixiember in New Zealand. Yeah, I really enjoy interviewing Dilip. He's always got a lot of, well, shall we say, research behind what he says. But despite that, the controversy that can sometimes arise from covering this kind of material is very dangerous.
Oh, yeah, Vinny. I mean, people are going to say, defenders of the establishment are going to say, oh, look, he's just trying to get the government on technicalities. He's nitpicking. He's got too much time on his hands, is a cliche one. Everyone's got the same amount of time here, believe it or not. Some people choose it to watch, use it to watch rugby and drink beer all day. Other people research things.
You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. How glad are you that you're spending your time listening to us? We'll be right back.
Oh, and pay taxes. That's the best use of time.